Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Evan.
Hello.
And we are also joined today by James Keaton, better known as Redbeard Ops.
Hello.
Hey, hey. Evan, what do you got for us today?
When you make something that you love, it's a really remarkable experience, and then you start looking out and might make something for somebody else. And when you make something that somebody else loves, holy hell, the whole world cracks open, man.
Nice. I like that. Man, that sounds, it sounds like Adam Savage, or it sounds like, I'm trying to think. The way you said it, it reminds me of Essential Craftsman for some reason. I think it was like the way you read it reminds me of Essential Craftsman.
Well, but, yeah, you got it right. Adam Savage.
It sounds just like him.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been working on my my tested impersonation. Yeah, no, I was watching the... actually, I was looking for quotes, and I was watching his video last night. I think it was, what was the exact video?
New one?
Oh, yeah, no, Ask Adam. It was like one of the ask things from his patrons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just, what is a maker? That's the video. And it's really good. It's this 5-minute thing at the end. That's kind of how he wraps it up. And he's also talking about how he kind of despises gatekeeping on all these crafts and maker things, right? He's basically saying, even if you have the inspiration to make anything, or it's music, or it's writing, or something that wasn't there before, is because of you, you're a maker, and you don't need gatekeeping. And then he's also trying to inspire people. Once you make something for yourself that you love, it's amazing. But then when you make something else for someone that they love, yeah, the whole world cracks open, as he says.
Yeah.
That's so I true. I didn't know his name was... His name's Adam on Essential Craftsman?
No, it's... Adam Savage is
from Tested.
Oh, okay. I'm Tested. With you. Yeah. I'm sorry.
The other person I suggested.
The first one.
Yeah, right? No, I love that Essential Craftsman's channel. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's something about the way you said that it like the way it came across was those two popped into my head right away. And maybe it's something about their like positivity that like Adam right. comes across super positive all the time. He's trying to like spread his knowledge. And that's the same exact way that Essential Craftsman comes across, is just like purely, you know, entertaining, but just there for, you know, giving knowledge out freely and enjoying other people getting that knowledge. So
yeah, what I like about his channel is it's kind of morphing not only from, you know, making things, but also kind of into like a philosophical channel, you know. He's
yeah
throwing down life lessons, I think, a lot more often, which I like.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, it's funny, we put out a the Brick Forge video, I think it was a couple days after he did, so we got all these comments, like people were like, oh, you're just copying off of the Essential Craftsman, da 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 da. I'm like, no, that's not true, but I absolutely love the Essential Craftsman. We're not copying all of them, but I also don't think that's an insult. Like, I love that channel, it's great.
Right. Yeah, so. It's funny when people say that type of stuff, like, man, you're just doing it because of this guy. It's like, for one, it takes a couple weeks. Yeah, so even right. if you put one out and we happen to put something up the next day, it's been shot and it took weeks to just get out. And okay. And yes, everything's been done on YouTube. It's like yeah. it's like trying to write a new story. They've all been written, but we're going to try to do our own version of it.
Right. Yeah, that could be super frustrating, man. Sometimes you just want to do it your own way and put a different spin on it too, you know. It's not theft at this point, you know. I think a lot of the stuff that's on YouTube is darn near public domain.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the things I think you do really well is you shout people out all the time. I mean, you shouted us out on your leather video, and I was like, oh, cool.
Oh, dude, well, that helped a lot, man. That y'all's leather making sheath video was extremely helpful when making your first pouch sheaths.
Yeah, man, those are, and exactly. That's, I say all the time that I'm not a huge fan of leather work. I don't mind doing it. I like doing it. I think it looks really good with knives, but it's a process thing. And Devin, you mentioned it. It's like, it's the difference between cooking and baking. So it's like knife making and, you know, crafting things like that's like cooking, where you can kind of play around with it. You can do some different stuff. Obviously there's some things you got to get right.
Right.
But leather work is like baking. It's like, you have to follow these steps in order. And if you don't, then you're like, you're screwed. You know, you got to get all your rivets in and your snaps in on the inside, and you had a good die on the inside, then you die on the outside, then you stitch, and then it's like, yeah, you can really kill yourself if you throw them out of order. So
with the leather work, I feel like I'm slowly starting to enjoy it way more, if that makes any sense. Like, at first it was kind of a chore, now it's becoming more of like, oh man, this is an art in itself, you know. And
yeah,
what,
there's some really good guys on there that I've communicated with on Blade Forms that have been extremely helpful in kind of upping some leather game. They got some pros out there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
What when did that change come, James?
Man, I think it started when after I made five or six of them, you know, I was like, okay, I'm starting to kind of get it. I'm starting to see what a good quality leather sheath is. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to understand what sets apart kind of a really good leather maker versus a mediocre leather maker. So, and then just researching, you know, they got a sheaths and such section on Blade Forms that they have a bunch of gentlemen on there that really know their craft, and they'll point out some of the finer details of what they're doing. And it kind of makes you realize, you know, what to look for on a high-end piece of leather work. So, man, it's hard stuff, but I'm starting to like it because of that. I think if it was easy, it wouldn't be as fun to do.
Yeah, I agree. And it does have that level of skill that it takes to get it done well. And when you get to that point and you start seeing things that you're doing that are turning out really well and really clean, which is the other thing for leather work, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. gotta have that clean, you know, even spacing on your stitching and your gaps and stuff and your cuts, and when all that stuff starts to happen, it really is it is rewarding. Like I said, I love the look, the with a leather sheath with a knife, or, you know, a mask for an axe or something like that. And so I keep making leather and buying leather because of that. But again, yeah, it's that there's not a lot of
a holster is
play.
A holster is fun to play with, but you really want to play with a gun, right? Like, you want a nice fitting holster, and it's cool to look at, but you really want to get the gun out and play with it.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah,
one thing that really leveled up the leather work I was doing was just buying good quality leather. Mm-hmm. That was something that kind of blew my mind. You know, I got some Wicked and Craig, like a quarter of a side, and it made all the difference in the world just working with quality leather.
Yeah. Yeah. Having that like consistent thickness and, mm-hmm. Preparation. And it's funny. I've still just used Tandy leather, and I have a Tandy nearby, so I can go into the brick and mortar store and like look at the pieces and pick out stuff. So I like doing that. It's definitely not ideal. Like I said, most of my knives and sheaths are all utilitarian, and it's very, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to do something that is going to look a certain way as long as it's clean. And I like some of the defects sometimes in the leather if you get like patterns and things. So I don't mind using some of the cheaper stuff, but it definitely does make a difference. You know, I can go in and I can pick through and pick ones that I know are good quality. Well, let me introduce our guest. So if you haven't already heard or know of James Keaton, James Keaton is the self-proclaimed weekend warrior knife maker YouTuber Redbeard Ops and new father. He's got a couple week old baby in the house as well, which is super awesome, man. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
I've been following and watching your videos for a couple years as a knife maker and as a YouTuber myself. Obviously we're all inspired and pulling different inspiration from all over the place, and so I search all the time for knife making videos and find tons of awesome stuff from your channel, as well as all the like fabricating stuff you do. That's something that's fascinates me, and I love that you're always inventing and coming up with new tools and things to use in the shop. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe just a little bit about like how you got into knife making?
So it's actually funny the way I got into knife making. I was watching a movie called, if I remember right, it was The Hunted. With I think it was Tommy Lee Jones in it, or something like that.
That's a great movie.
Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah, and they made a knife in the woods or something, and they fought each other with it in some ridiculous sequence. But
in 10 minutes.
Yeah, so them making a knife, and I'm like, you know, I look at my dad, and I'm like, I want to try that. And I think I was, 15 or 16 or something. So we made a very crude knife the next day out of mild steel. And I played with it for a couple of years towards the end of high school. I was, you know, making forges, and I actually made a, you know, 25 ton hydraulic press, and I kind of dived into making the tools more than making the knives at the time. And then I kind of dropped it for, I don't know, maybe almost a decade, and then picked it back up maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Just been cruising ever since. So I figured, you know, as I get better, kind of wanted to share the journey, so to speak, on YouTube, and it seems like that's been that's kind of part of the hobby, you know, documenting almost and what I learned and condensing it into a video format.
So you went from, like, I'm not going to say the simple part of making a rough knife to then making the tools. I would feel like that's a much tougher jump to start to figure out how to engineer and kind of invent your own tools.
Yeah, I mean, at first, you know, when I was in high school, making the tools, that was kind of fun because I was getting to use a welder, and that kind of fabrication was neat. I didn't really know what I needed. You know, I ended up making 3 forges in high school, and 2 of them were completely terrible, you know.
Nice.
It would be better to make the knives first and learn how to make the tools for making knives after. But now that I kind of, you know, turn out much better quality work than I did when I was 16, as we all should, hopefully, with age, now I kind of can think about the tools that I'd need and try to fabricate something, so... And then there's a bunch of makers online that you pull from, you know, the Stonewash Tumbler. I got that from a guy's channel. His name was 927 Forge. And I just took his tumbler, kind of made some improvements or modifications and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of sharing going on online too. And it's kind of nice. And the nice aspect of the YouTube game is you kind of get to see how everyone's doing it and take the best or what you think is the best from their process. So
yeah, yeah, I think that's a huge part about about the current knife making world is that everything is out there for people. It's all open source, you know, information now, which is really nice, and so many people like, you know, Jason Knight and Steve Schwarzer, people who have kind of done these processes in the beginning and started these things, are now putting all that information out there for the knife, you know, community to use. It's super, super cool. And I think, like you said, you're kind of going back and forth between that process, whether you do a knife first and then figure out which tools you need, or you want to make a knife, so then you have to make a tool. Well, then once you have that tool and you start making the knives, then you're like, well, okay, well, now I need to step up to the next better version of this tool.
Exactly.
So I'll make that, and then keep going back and forth. And I think I just watched your shop tour video this morning, and I was kind of going through some of the videos that that I hadn't seen from yours, and I came across that one. That was really cool because I hadn't actually seen, I mean, obviously you work in your shop and you film there, so
mm-hmm.
you kind of get that feeling of what it looks like, but it was nice to kind of see you go through. And I like how you would, like, there'd be like something random and you'd be like, oh, and there's this here too, and it has like nothing to do with knife making, but it's just like part of the shop. You're like, and here's a sledgehammer. Like, yeah. I was like, nice. Because it's like, that's what, that's, you know, the shop is, it's like the second home, and everything is for a reason. You know, it's like, I use this random thing. Like, this is where I keep the, whatever, my, you know, my paintball helmet is up in this corner.
Like, yeah, I got 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag too. You know?
Yeah.
Really be nice to have some more shop space.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
The cool thing with the knife making deal is that, you know, you start off, everyone starts off with, you know, files, drill maybe, and maybe even a 1x30 from Harbor Freight or something, but the path of gaining more tools throughout the process and making your tools to refine one little small process in a knife making build, it's pretty cool, because by the end of it, you know, you have a process for making, say, a full tang knife, and you can do it way more efficiently and get better results with homemade tools and stuff. So
Cool. Stepping up to that next the next level. I know you saw my Instagram post on the knife that I just snapped two nights ago.
That's painful.
Yeah, as my buddy and I are making knives for friends of ours who have two kids, and it's a version of the little bone handle knife that I made for my daughter last Christmas. They asked us to make their two kids little, like, whittling camping knives, so we each made one, and we did the profiling separately. We did the heat treat together, and then I tempered them at my place, and then I was kind of just, they both had little bits of warps in them, which I'll get to your your straightening jig soon, because that thing is amazing.
That's
but but yes, I was doing my little, you know, three bolts in the vise trying to straighten, and I straightened mine pretty good. It was pretty straight, you know, like probably acceptable, but I could still see a little bit in it. And then I straightened my buddy's and got his better than mine, almost perfect. So then I was like, all right, well, let me go back and try to do mine a little bit more. And of course, you know, it's like one more bend, one more clamp, and doink. But I talk about that because the, you know, I have my shop now set up in a certain way that I've been making and expanding on tools that I was like, all right, now I need to make another one. So I was like, well, I'll make two, because might as well make two. Mm-hmm. So I, like, it took me maybe an hour to, you know, get back to, or maybe not even that long, maybe a half an hour to cut out, you know, shape, profile, drill all the holes, and get ready to heat treat again. So, you know, which would have taken me a day or whatever back when I started to do all that. Now it's
with a file or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Grinders and, you know, which I love all those tools, and they, you know, they really push you to, like you said, to expand and get better and try to, you know, make a process go faster.
Yeah, the whole warp deal, man, that's always a battle. I had my best luck back when I was getting warps. I had my best luck straightening it on the second tempering cycle. You know, I temper it once just to make sure that I'm not going to crack the blade.
Yep.
And then I would put I'd basically do like a three-point type jig in the tempering oven during it. I'd go just a little bit further than bent the other way, and it seemed to work pretty good, but the big change for me on warps was first using that straightening jig right after the quench. That helped a lot. And then actually that pretty much solved it, to be honest. I'll quench now for 4 to 5 seconds, And then while the blade's still around 500 degrees or higher, I'll get it in that straightening jig, clamp it down, and then just wait till it's cool. And so far, I haven't had a blade come out of that thing that wasn't straight.
That's so awesome.
And then I make sure to clamp it. Sorry to cut you off. I make sure to clamp it between two pieces of angle iron after that.
Yeah.
And put it in the tempering oven so it doesn't move. And then by the time it gets out of the tempering oven, I move on over to that that surface grinding attachment. And so the blade's straight already. The blade's not warped. And then I can clean up the flats, and then I'm in a good spot to start grinding the bevels.
Yeah, right on.
I feel like it seemed like such a violent process when I watched it. I was like, oh, something's going to happen. But it's like you got it in the headlock. Like, no, you stay.
Oh, yeah.
Zoink.
And you know, I got that idea from Alex at Outdoors 55. He had a vise, and he'd put two pieces of angle iron in his bench vise, and then hold the blade and clamp it between those. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Simple Little Life had a woodworking vise that had two pieces of aluminum for when he was heat treating stainless.
So I just kind of
put those two together, and then instead of just using the wood vise, I just put an impact on it. So. Yeah, man. Makes all the difference.
That's awesome. Like in your video, you're like, and I sat here and did this a bunch more times, more than I showed. Zoom out, zoom in.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Every time you post one of them on Instagram, I'm like, yes, here we go again.
Yeah, awesome. People really like that thing.
Now, I'm new to Instagram, but to me, that seems like a perfect Instagram video. It's about like not even 9 seconds, but it's an easily repeatable, interesting thing to watch.
Yep.
I think I sat and watched it 10 times just because it was an interesting, quick process. You don't have to invest anything in it. You're like, oh, let me see that again. Almost want a little bit more, but then, okay, I'll just watch it over and over.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because it's not like I haven't put it up there before, you know? Every time I put that video up there, it's like one of the best videos of the week or something.
Yeah, everyone's like, yes, here we go again.
You just need your, like, awesome. Hey, weekly, just do them every Sunday or something, Sunday morning.
Yeah,
I also watched the head knife video, so I was like seeing that going kind of long and funky, like.
I tried. It worked. It's a little bigger than the vise was, but
right.
Man, that's not something I want to do again. I'll be honest.
I want to go back to the hunted.
Oh yeah.
Do you know the story behind that, James? Behind the kind of the true story of that?
No, not at all.
Dustin, what do you got? What
do you got for us? So it's funny that you say that because not that movie, but that knife, the tracker knife by Tom Brown is what got me into knife making as well. One of the main things that got me into it. So when I was, I'm trying to not clear my throat into the microphone, but I just don't think about it. So when I was in college, I had a class and my teacher from the work that I was doing is that it was a site specific art installation class. And I was kind of had this concept of hanging canvas up in trees to like with patterns on them to do kind of different areas of tribal people's lands. So this idea, but she knew that I was kind of interested in kind of outdoor stuff and, Native American culture and also kind of, I guess that stuff growing up in the country and making bows and arrows and things. And, so she suggested the book called The Tracker by Tom Brown. And Tom Brown is the real person who is the Tommy Lee Jones character in that movie.
Okay.
So the movie The Hunted is actually based off a true story basically based off a true story by Tom Brown where he had taught one, he taught special forces because he grew up and learned tracking from his best friend's grandfather who was an Apache, taught him and his best friend tracking and stalking and how to live in the woods and how to move quietly. And so he's been doing that his whole life. He's trained tons of people. He's got a school called the Tom Brown Tracker School, I think. And might be in his early 70s, not super old, but yeah, if you ever get a chance to watch the extras on that movie, he's in the extras showing Benicio del Toro how to move and showing Tom Brown how to move and like leading that knife fight scene that they do.
It was cool, man.
Yeah, it was. And it's, and you know, it's, it seems raw and real. Mm. Like two people fighting with knives, it's not going to be a battle like Jackie Chan.
No,
it's like you get a couple cuts, and that's pretty much all you're going to get.
So no one's getting out of that fight unblooded.
Right, exactly.
That book, I think I read it after you did, Dust. Yeah. So good, and those stories of him tracking in real life, tracking down the ex-military guy who kind of went AWOL, and the way he describes what really happened, it's such a good read. There's an early recommendation for you, The Tracker.
Yeah. And actually, so yeah, that book, The Tracker, is about like his life growing up as a kid in he grew up in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. But then he has a couple books after that. And one of the other books is all about different stories that he's had from his experiences as a tracker and stuff. So,
there was a lot. There's some things I took away from that, the stories. But I remember him talking about when you hike. We always, early on, when you're a kid, if you're hiking, you always had this mindset of like keeping up a pace and like blasting through the land.
Yeah.
And he just kind of explains how silly that is. So then he just, maybe that comes with age too, but you just slow down and start to take it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then also his other thing that I think of a lot, was it called spread vision?
Scatter vision, I think.
Scatter vision.
Right, yeah.
Right, where you're basically, if you're trying to, you could use it in hunting or, as he would do, try to find people, where you don't really have a focus. You're not focusing in woods when you're looking for something like, okay, there. He would just keep back. Yeah, right. Keep back, not focus on anything, and then your eyes much easier catch movement. Then you pick what to focus on.
It's the way to do it, man. I bet there's something to that. And I bet there's something to just like if you were like throwing a spear or something. Relying on the millions of years of evolution to help you throw that spear and stop thinking about it. You know, just go throw it. Right, there's something to that.
Yeah. Yeah. That in my mind, that's I see the difference between a guy throwing a ball and a girl throwing a ball. Like, you get this like this real weird, awkward like movement, and then something about, I don't know what that is. Maybe that, like you said, maybe that's the millions of years of evolution. But
I'm not gonna cross that line.
No, I know. Yeah, exactly. All right, we just lost. I was gonna say half, but I'll say we just lost 1/8 of our podcast listeners.
1/8, jeez, that's a lot.
I know. I wish. Actually, what was the bow build video we put out? And I was kind of keeping track of it a couple of days in a row, and I like looked. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, we have 100% male viewers. 100% after like 4 days.
For those people,
I love looking at that stuff on the analytics. Oh my gosh, I have like 4 female followers.
Yeah.
4 female knife makers out there. Nice, one of them is probably my wife giving me pity views.
She's like started a couple of different channels just to get you up there. Hiding in the background.
Oh man. It's terrible.
Yeah, I'm always impressed when a video has more than, you know, a couple percent. I'm like, hey, look at that. Yeah. 1.5%.
I tell you, we got to pull in Nicole, Dustin's wife. Mm-hmm. We got to pull her and do a knitting video just to, come on, try to get something.
There you go.
You would think the leather work would get some, you know?
Yeah, right. I know. I think the extent, we've had some women comment on the channel and stuff, but usually the extent of that is someone be like, oh, hello, you're super cute. I'm like, wait, what? And then, Tai Chin from Korea.
Well, I don't get any of those. So, how about I was curious on y'all's channel on the geography. Like, I thought it was pretty surprising that only 46 or so or 50% of my views come from the U.S. I don't know if y'all see the same thing.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much the same. I think ours is up 50 to 60, maybe.
That's really interesting to me, because it's like you would think it would be the bulk of the U.S. I mean, it is the bulk U.S., but you would think it'd be higher than 50%.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm always really impressed when I kind of scroll down through that list of all the different countries, and then you get to the very bottom, and then after 40 different countries and you get to the bottom, it says all other countries, and it's still 3 or 4 or 5%. I'm like, man, there's other countries other than these 50 I just looked at that people are watching the channel. It's amazing.
They got to be bored, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just watching some foreign-speaking knife maker, you know?
Right, exactly. They're just trying to learn how to speak English.
Yeah. Because I darn near talked during all of mine.
Yeah, well, so. You know. That's right. I was going to ask you about that. So what's your kind of process when you're filming or when you're making a video? Are you just purely filming? I know there are sometimes you talk.
Yes.
And values and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah. So for a while I tried, I had a shotgun mic trying to talk on camera and that worked fine. I did some green screen too and that worked okay. What I really like to do is do most of the filming during the building process and then voiceover with quality audio. That's mm-hmm. what I like to do. But every once in a while, I'll throw up the green screen and try to get a little more personal. So,
nice. I agree that the good audio is important. That can make or break a video. You're like, okay, I'm invested in what's going on right now. It's kind of cool. And then people start talking and they sound like they're a million miles away. And you're like, oh, this is so annoying.
Audio makes a difference, man.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to my channel. Coming to you from the SS Chicago.
Well, and the good news is it doesn't really cost much to get good audio. You know, I got this boom microphone that's like $30 or something, USB mic. And then in DaVinci Resolve, which is the editing software I use, they have a really good noise canceling effects. So you can go back and cancel all the noise out. And you can even affect the dialogue a little bit to bass it up for a male voice or down for a female voice. So.
Ah, nice. Yeah, we started with a really nice wireless Sennheiser lavalier setup. But that's because we had it. Or I had it, or my dad had it, and then I kind of stole it, like you do. And then, so that's like the best. But so that started breaking. So then we switched to the Rode wireless lavalier setup, and that's only $200. And compared to, I mean, the top ones are like $500-$600. But it's a really good, stable system. And if you don't have the actual cable with the lavalier mic, you can just use the receiver or the other box. That's what we've been doing for a while, and it sounds really good.
Oh, yeah. Your also audio comes through great.
Yeah, that's one of the things that obviously Devin is a huge effect on because he's doing all the recording and audio and editing. So, you know, and with his background in film and video, he's got that on, you know, on par, which I've always appreciated. And, we were just talking about in the bow video, I walked away from I shot the bow for the first time and then walked away from Devin as I was going over to get the arrow and talking about the shot that I missed and owe him $5 for. but he said he lost the audio completely because I got like too far away or I turned my back or something. So I had to piece together all this weird audio and get it, but I couldn't tell at all. It sounded perfect.
That was weird. I don't know. It hasn't done that. But once you got like beyond 10 feet and the camera I'm using, you can't monitor the audio straight from the camera, which is one of the reasons we're getting a new camera next year. But so I don't know. And I guess that's another reason why we do so many takes, because I'm like, that was perfect, Dustin. But just in case, let's do another one.
Speaking of that mic, I just I don't know if you guys, either of you watched, or I mean, I know you know Adam Savage, both of you, but Laura Kampf, who's a female maker in Germany, she just had her like a live stream on making a I forget what it was called specifically. Adam called it something, but she did a live. It was this machine that basically like a disc sander that spun a propeller, which was on one side had a box full of Brillo pads or steel wool that she lit on fire, so it made this huge like spinning fireball. It was so awesome. She did a live stream last Friday and then put out her video on Sunday. I'm a teacher, a high school teacher, and I saw it pop up on my phone because I was going through, and I think we'd finished projects, so I was like, well, let's have just a relaxed day, we'll watch some videos on making stuff, and I saw that pop up, so I was like, oh, let's watch this live stream of like celebrating the end of 2020. But but I noticed that Laura had the same microphone, and she had it just like in the pocket of her jacket, you know, and just the main box, Dev, so she didn't have like anything hooked up. And then she had some, you know, like Isotunes headphones or something in. She was talking to Adam Savage live.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool. I was like, hey, look, there's our mic.
That stuff makes a difference.
Yeah, for sure. There's, and I think that close-up mic is one of the keys. I mean, even a good shotgun, I mean, that's what many production places use it. But yep. they also back it up with a lavalier just in case. Because you get that, I mean, straight from the source, it's hard to beat. And yeah, that was like, I remember at film school, that was like day one. They're like, all right, so you got the perfect shot. Your lighting's perfect. Your actors, your take is amazing. But if your audio is shitty, everything's ruined.
Yep.
No matter how much work you put into it, that's it. It's done. You have to try again. You have to do it again because you have to get clean audio.
Not to discourage those new makers out there who want to start YouTube channels, you can get by with some pretty cheap equipment. Like, yeah. The shotgun mic that I use when I do use one, it's like $40. You're not going to bring it to like a, you know, an industrial film shot. But
right.
if you're shooting in your garage on a secondhand DSLR or something, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah. And a lot of that stuff, it's almost like, it's like those commercials where they compare your teeth with like a piece of like paper towel.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you don't really notice how yellow it is unless I put it up next to a piece of printer paper. Yeah, I get that. But on my teeth, I'm not putting my teeth up next to a printer paper, so why do I need that? It's the same thing with these amazing mics that you can get that are $1,000. Yeah, they do sound better if you like compare them right away, right next to them and nitpick. But on its own, they sound good, and they're not going to... The main thing is not to distract from what you're trying to do. Most people, 99.9% of people won't notice.
So, you hit a point of not diminishing returns, but probably slightly diminishing returns when it comes to your paycheck. So, you know, you can get from, say 10% good is the built-in camera on your DSLR, built-in microphone on your DSLR.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can get that up to like 75, 80% with a fairly cheap, you know, TacStar shotgun mic. And then if you want that extra 10 or 20%, you're going to have to pay for it. But most people can't tell. I mean, I'm going to say, I could be wrong, most people can't tell the difference of that 10% unless they're listening to it with like Bose headphones that cost $500.
They have to be paying that extra 20% to get that to hear the
exactly
right. Yeah. And everyone's and like you just said, the Bose thing, everyone's audio setup is different.
Oh yeah.
So as long as you get decent clean audio, that's all you can try to do. I mean, you can tweak it here and there, but someone's going to be on a sound bar, someone's going to be listening off their shitty phone speaker, you don't know, and then someone's going to have their Bose, and just get it clean. That's the thing I would say to main people. As long as there's not a lot of things, you're not hitting it, you're not far away from it, stay close to it, get clean audio, you'll be fine.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, the editing process is pretty fun, though. I kind of got into it a little bit. Making sure the audio is clean, but also the video. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm using not the most expensive camera. You know, I got a Panasonic G7, and it's a little Micro Four Thirds, and it's great. It gets the job done. It'll shoot 4K if I want it to, but I do most of myself stuff in 1080, 30 frames per second is what I normally do.
Yeah.
And I'll do some slow-mo stuff with the iPhone at like 128. Mm-hmm. But I really like getting in, you know, DaVinci, and I feel like a nice clean edit kind of goes a long way for the viewer, and you want it to almost, I feel like I want it to be almost so clean that they can't really notice that it's like over edited, but to have a very clean, crisp, sharp picture, especially when you're getting close-ups with machining stuff, I think that goes a long way.
For sure, yeah. I mean, a lot of videos you see are just, and a lot of them are great, because we've all gone to somewhere, we've typed in like the exact small thing, and there's Jim Bob like over his shoulder, like explaining, here I got the blah blah blah, and it's like 4x3 and it, whatever, but it works. But when you get up close and you get a nice crisp picture and crisp audio, it goes a long way.
I mean, I may be a little over the top, but I'll color grade just about every clip, not like a full color grade, but I'll adjust all the, you know, I'll adjust the sharpness probably every clip, and then I'll definitely adjust the exposure, because I'm not good. I shoot in manual, but I'm not like really good at it. So I'll have some over and under exposed video all the time that kind of needs some tweaks.
It's one of those tools that once you know about it, you use it like digital calipers or something, right? I could use a ruler to mark, you know, but if I have digital calipers, might as well use digital calipers, and I use them all the time because it's there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the way you shoot your videos, James, you have more time to do that, because most of the time it's you shoot you working. and then you come back and you lay the voice over over it. So you have a bit more time to fiddle with it, I guess, which is nice, which I kind of wish we had, because I don't do any color grading once it's unless it's overexposed. I don't really mess with it. Whatever comes out of the camera I use. That's because it takes so
long. Y'all have a really good space too. I mean, it's kind of challenging. I got the garage door there that's open, and so if I'm shooting by the garage door versus inside the shop, the lighting is so different.
Ours, Dustin's basement stays pretty, unless he's in the corners, but it stays pretty.
Yeah, that the way I have that shop, the lighting I have that shop set up is when we moved in this house, there was the bench, which is against my wall, which now is the bench that I use that has the vise attached to it. That was there. And then in the middle of the floor, along with some other junk and random bits of storage and stuff, was just a big pile of those construction lights. So the big yellow extension with the yellow basket lights. It was just in a giant pile that was all tangled on the floor when I moved in. And so my wife and I hung it and ran it around the basement so we could set it up. And I was like pumped right away. I was like, yes, a shop space, finally. my own shop space. And then of course it got half of it got filled up with storage. And then, we have one of the early videos is us building the wood rack and then redoing the entire space. So be able to extend into the back, and that made a huge difference. And then, that's full of tools and junk and stuff. And
there's always space, a process. You'll fill
it. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. But, I was thinking we should, we were thinking about doing some quick videos, and one of the things I was doing, we did do a shop tour video maybe a year and a half ago or so, and I've kind of made some significant changes since then in the shop, so thinking about doing another tour, brief tour, just to show what things are doing. But
evolving always,
it goes back to the same thing with the tools. There's always, you're always kind of trying to make the process a little bit that more clean and fluid when you're working in a shop space, especially in a shop space. And that's one of the things I love about Adam Savage's build videos. He's always, working on shop infrastructure. I think that's so much fun.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah. But the part I love the most is I'll sit there in there and I'll look around. I'm like, well, I want this new piece of equipment and I need to find space for it somehow. And, more times than not, you can kind of figure out a way to just build more shelving. Yeah. get stuff in there, and then you end up with four walkways. And
right. <that's it. laughs> Well, if I'm the only one in here and I don't mind walking sideways through three quarters of my shop, then I'm okay.
Yeah. So ours is kind of half gym too. So it's kind of, it needs to be open enough for us to be able to get in there and use it as a gym as well.
Right.
So it could be slightly challenging at times.
I think you need to build an extension on the back of that garage.
I know, man. We need to shop something fierce. Yeah.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
I don't think the HOA is cool with that.
Right. Yeah, I've been thinking about building kind of a lean-to structure off the back of my house next to the opening that goes down to the shop so I can move all my forging stuff outside. Because I really, I use my forge to do heat treating most of the time. And, when I can, I'll take it outside and do it. But if I can't, I'll run it for half an hour in the basement, turn on fans so they're blowing out and stuff, so I kind of get some air circulation. But I just run it real quick. And we've had people be like, are you crazy running a forge in your basement? And I'm like, well, that's the space I have,
I always close the door when I heat treat so I can see what's going on. And I've always wondered how fast it would kill me, but it hasn't done it yet, and I haven't gotten lightheaded or anything. So
right. Yeah, exactly. Same thing. I just kind of keep track of it. I usually leave the door open and turn a fan on blowing out, so it's kind of circulating some air, and call it good. What are you going to do? You got to do what you got to do. Yeah, it's like my shop is right below my daughter's bedroom, so obviously we can only film so late as well. As long as there's not a carbon monoxide poisoning seeping up through the floors.
I mean, if we pass out first, then they'll know to stop.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a canary in a coal mine.
Right, exactly. I do have CO2 or CO sensors on all of my fire I don't know, things as well.
I remember we had one of those in when I lived in New York City, actually in Brooklyn. And every time it went off, we just thought something was wrong with it. So it was always just like,
darn it.
Those things, once they go off, you're like, oh, this stupid thing's going off again. Unplug it.
Unplug it.
This thing's annoying, trying to save your life all the time.
Definitely make sure to have a good fire extinguisher.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I even put a solenoid on my blown burner and forge. I just kind of worry, you know, if that's what I worry about more than the carbon monoxide. I worry about, like, you know, me stepping away to go grab something from inside the house, and then the power goes out, and then power comes back on 3 minutes later, and it's pumped full of gas, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I will say I do like the blown burners way better than the Venturis. Don't get me wrong, the Venturis are fine, but the control you get with a blown burner I like a little bit better.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm interested in that. The brick forge that I built, I just built out of the fact that we had the materials available to us, my buddy Sean and I. So we built kind of a prototype version, which he has. That's Crafting Life. I want his channel. And then we built the double burner for me to use. And we had the hard refractory bricks and the angle iron. Pretty much I built that, you know, with no money except for the burners, which I bought. But I definitely, when I was going to build that one, my plan originally was to build a propane tank forge, you know, using a propane tank, which, mm-hmm. again, same thing. I saw, I think maybe one of the first times I saw it was when Simple Little Life, when he made his, you know, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. You know, fairly simple, cut out the hole, you know, open it up, put in the KO wool and the hard bricks and whatever, and mm-hmm. you're good to go. So that was the plan, but then I ended up having the different materials available to me, so we built the brick forges, which work fine for heat treating, which is, we use predominantly for heat treating, but then we also use them more often as well, just for blacksmithing, just doing some stuff.
Yeah, I actually found that I did the propane tank one. I liked it. It's perfectly good. I would advise an air tank. Those are 10 inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent size. It's a great size. I guess it depends on what you're doing. You guys do more axe stuff, so maybe a bigger one's needed.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was thinking about too. And I'm on the edge of getting a heat treating oven.
Oh, man.
And so, thinking back and
the
forth
dream.
To that, yeah, right, yeah,
the real actually, dream.
I'll shout out Jesse Allison from Mountain Prevail Knife Works. He reached out to me recently, and he's looking to sell some stuff. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to take him up on it, but hopefully in the near future that'll be something I can get and use that to do heat treating. But until then, you know,
I think I'll get there eventually too. That's a nice. That's all. That's when you know you're really stepping up your game,
right? Yeah, and with the Journey knife, which kind of prototyped and have come up with, and I've used over the summer and into the winter, and I'm really happy with. I want to put a run of, you know, kind of a small batch run of those out there for sale, and so as I'm getting to the point where I want to possibly sell more knives, because at this point it's still pretty much just hobby. I'm using them. I'm making for, you know, commissions for friends and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
but because that's not really my main focus. I do all sorts of different stuff trying to just, you know, make lots of things, but I would like to make more, and I would like to put them out there. And so that's kind of one of those things that if you want to be able to professionally heat treat to a point where you feel confident that you have a good, you know, hardness and you can sell a product that you can stand behind, then yeah, it's kind of that next point, but it's not cheap. It's a big jump.
The only other option there is, I feel like, I'm definitely more of a YouTuber than a knife maker now, I'd say, which is kind of crazy. But but the knives that I do make, I sell a lot to friends and family and coworkers and stuff. But I also have sold some to the general public. And, you know, I guess I wouldn't do that if I was using like 5160 or if I was using even like 1095. But with 1084, I could be wrong. I feel pretty damn confident in the heat treats that I have. And, you know, I also do... In the beginning, especially, I did a bunch of testing on 1084 heat treats, and it's just such kind of a, you don't need to soak time, you know, it's such kind of a no-brainer steel that it really performs well with just a forged heat treat. And I've put some knives through way more than I think my customers will. So
right.
I don't feel too bad about that. But if I was doing any more exotic steel, but even with 1084, I would definitely feel better if it was heat treated with a heat treating oven, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a pretty forgiving steel. And like you said, it's you can be pretty confident in it. And you know, it's obviously the other part of it is just customer service. Obviously, you tell your customers, like, this is what it is. They can see your channel, so they know what you're making. So if they don't want to buy a knife that's not heat treated in an oven, then they can buy it from somewhere else, you know?
Totally. I mean,
this is what I'm giving you. And obviously, if it fails on you, you bring it back. Like, we'll make you another one. Like,
right.
Knock on wood, I haven't had one fail yet, but you never know, right?
Right, yeah.
That's why I pretty much make everything with a Corby fastener, too. I mean, I don't think it's necessary, but I like having a mechanical connection on the handle scales along with G-Flex. And I feel like those two things together makes a pretty damn bulletproof handle.
That's what you did on the Journey Dust, was that the one?
Yep, Corby fasteners on the Journey. That's the first time I used Corby's. And, you know, I've just, as like a hobby maker, I started out with just using 1/8-inch brass rod that I got from Lowe's. And I mean, those, my very first knives that I made haven't failed. They're just using like regular two-part epoxy from a tube that you can squeeze both syringe at the same time. And I, you know, basically sharpened them or flattened the scales on sandpaper on probably a piece of plywood or something, you know, at the time. It's like, you know, they have gaps and stuff just from the original, me not being very accurate with it, but none of them have come apart or failed. So I feel like
when you're taking the next step, I feel like it's for like the 10 or 20 or 30 year knife, you know.
Yeah, yep.
And it may not even, it's really not necessary. I mean, plenty of knife makers make perfectly good knives without using mechanical connection fasteners like a Loveless fastener or a Corby fastener, but I feel like it's just another step of, hey man, you can run over this thing with a tank.
Right.
the handle scale is going to break before they come apart, you know.
Yeah, and the difference, you know, the difference in cost. You got to pay like a couple bucks for a Corby or whatever, you know, a buck and a half or something, as opposed to you know, 20 cents for a piece of brass rod. So it's not like you're jumping up, you know, it's not $30 or $40 difference where you can get into like handle material where it can be a big difference. You go from like regular wood to stabilized burls and things, and you get up to $40-$50, you know, for scale. So that can start to get really crazy.
It's just
a good peace of mind.
Something like those bolts, it's one of we always kind of talk about tricks that you learn.
Yeah.
And as you're making stuff and you get better and better, it's all tricks. I mean, there's craftsmanship and there's knowledge and wisdom, but I think that's another name for learning the tricks of the trade.
Absolutely.
You're like, oh, he uses that. Of course it comes out so much better. I've been doing it this way.
Right.
Like, no wonder his looks perfect. No wonder that's staying on. He's using that. So you're just... It's like when you learn to draw a 3D ball for the first time and you learn about shading and the angles, and then you're like, oh, that's how they do it. That's not that hard. Here we go.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've destroyed plenty of knife at this point. I feel like that's a good process to do. Destroy a couple of the knives you make.
Right.
Like completely in a vise, bending them. I mean, seeing when they actually break. But I've always been pretty impressed with the performance of those Corby fasteners, and coupled with G-Flex, of course. You know, I've done some epoxy testing,
right?
And I found that G-Flex definitely, it performs better. It performs better, I think, than the competition on non-metal items. So, for instance, it will connect to a micarta scale very well. I don't think it would be ideal for connecting brass to your full tang knife or something like that.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like a micarta scale, whenever I break a micarta scale off of a knife that I've used G-Flex and a Corby fastener, pieces of the micarta stay on the tang.
Oh, jeez.
So, I mean, the micarta is breaking to come off the knife.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've used some other epoxies, and they don't seem to grip on to the handle scale material as well.
Right.
But I think they perform better on metal. So I'll give a shout-out to, I guess, Combat Abrasives Rogue Epoxy. It doesn't seem to work as well to me on the handle scale material, but when I was doing a metal on metal test with it, it did seem to perform a little better than the G-Flex does. So that, I guess, you got different epoxies are good at different things,
right? Yeah. And you know, you got to think that also relates back to some of the prep, you know, the the prep, how flat you are, or if you've, yes, you know, you sanded your surface so you get some grip on the steels and things like that. So
for sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, I did. When I did the testing, I surface ground all the pieces and cleaned them, but there's always a chance that I got some oil in there or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like you said, on the knife, I mean, that's like crucial. You need to have flat,
yep,
clean pieces to get a good epoxy.
Yeah. And, you know, like anything else in any hobby that we do, there's always some people who have one way of thought and some people who have another way of thought. And, like, you know, what you can do is, you can do what you do, is test it yourself. You know, then you can at least stand behind, like, I like using this for this reason because I've tested it and I know it works well.
So, oh, yeah.
That's all you can do.
And, you know, I kind of cheated, you know, because I started off with the product that's kind of the gold standard.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if you get on the forums or anything, like, the G-Flex, over the last decade, yeah, it's G-Flex, man. Yep. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, man, it stands up to its name, man. That stuff's great.
That's the great thing about modern times. You can research something for 20 hours before you ever touch it. And you get 1,000 ideas of what should work, and then you probably get one of the best ones because you can go through all that and people, all their failures. But you can also get something that worked for you that doesn't work for 9 out of 10 people.
Right.
It's like, sometimes it's like vehicles where I had a Ford Explorer that ran through everything. I know, right, it's not necessarily a great truck and they explode, but my Ford Explorer did awesome for this amount of time. I also had another one that did terrible. But that's, I feel like you get that. Someone's like, oh, I don't know, it worked, yeah, for me.
Right. You know, a good piece of advice I would give to, like, any new knife maker is get on Bladeforms and create an account.
Yeah.
And then go to the Shop Talk section. And in that section, there is a link to a custom Google search engine for Bladeforms. And it is extremely helpful. You can pretty much type in anything in that little custom Google search for Bladeforms specifically, and find topics. You know, Bladeforms has been around for a long time. When I got into knife making in the beginning, it was there, and people were asking questions on it. So I'll type in a topic sometimes, and you'll be reading threads from like 2005, and there's a lot of good information on there, man.
Yeah, good information. Same thing when I got into knife making. Same thing. It was all Bladeforms that I was looking at. I remember just tons of great knife makers on Bladeforms, and also I remember that I'm not sure if Fiddleback Forge still does stuff on Bladeforms, but they always had their, like, Fiddleback Friday, which they now do on YouTube to talk about the knives that are available. That was, like, all on Bladeforms in the beginning. I was like, yeah, so great. So when you started talking about Bladeforms earlier and about the, like, the sheaths and things, I'm like, yeah, right on. That's a throwback.
Dude, they're still a great resource, man. I'm on there every day.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Just
looking to see what they're talking about, because you'll pick up some things here and there. And, you know, like you said, they had some amazing makers on there. They had, you know, that Nick Wheeler was pretty active on it for a while. Yep. I mean, on the sheath side, Paul Long was pretty active on there for a while. So, I mean, they've had some legends, so to speak, playing around on Bladeforms for a long time.
That's another one of those things that is awesome with technology these days, and the fact that we have social media, and even, you know, back to then where you have a website where everyone goes, and that's, I mean, everyone goes there and everyone's willing to pitch in information and put it out there. And then, and now you have Instagram and YouTube. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah. And actually I wanted to ask you briefly about Instagram. I mean, you have on Instagram, you have almost 13,500 subscribers. That's a good haul. I mean, I just hit 3,000 subscribers on Instagram. So I was wondering, did you start
y'all got
on
me,
Instagram?
Y'all got me beat handily on the YouTube side. Oh. So don't feel too bad. I started the Instagram and the YouTube thing around the same time. So for a while, they actually tracked pretty well with each other. Mm. And then the YouTube kind of took off. But, you know, for anyone looking to build their Instagram account, I would advise trying to post something every day. I feel like that helped a lot. Even if you do all your work in 2 or 3 days, like I do, on the weekends, I'd kind of store kind of a sequence of pictures and kind of post them once a day. So that, I feel like that went a long way for that growth, but it was just organic, man.
And that's so easy in my head compared to YouTube, to post one thing a day, one photo. That's like nothing. You just, like you said, backlog some things, but backlog a day of work and then just put them out one day at a time. Yeah. We were really not against that type of stuff. We just didn't think about it early on. right, all the other social media stuff. They're like, you should have this and this and this. We're like, okay. Like, I don't know.
That makes sense.
It's interesting, too, because I know there's a lot of people on Instagram that don't follow the YouTube channel, and obviously vice versa, too. And, you know, you'll post something on Instagram, and they'll ask a question, and it's like, well, here's a video for that.
Right, exactly. You know, so,
and I also have, I've done a little bit of content that's kind of Instagram exclusive, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, videos that aren't quite to my YouTube caliper, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. Like the one I posted yesterday, I'm making a modification to a work rest.
Right.
And I don't think that that's something that I would want to put on YouTube just because, you know, it's like 4 or 5 minute video at the most if I stretch it out. And right. It's not very intense, you know, it's a pretty simple thing. But if you speed it up to a minute and throw it on Instagram, people like watching that type of stuff on Instagram. So
right.
I've been doing small stuff like that because I have the footage, I'm doing it, I might as well film it, and then I'll just do like a quick edit and throw it on IGTV.
So. Yeah, and I think that that obviously it's like a feeder to YouTube, right? Because I want to send people over to YouTube so we can make money off of their views, ideally. But if you can give them little teasers, that's why we do like the sneak peeks and stuff, like check this out, this is what I'm working on, you know, this is what we're doing in the shop, and then we're gonna, you know, check it out on our video that's coming up soon.
You know, I'm not sure. You talk about making money on Instagram, and you're right, there's really not much monetization I think that you can do on there, but I think when you get, I'm not exactly sure what the follower count is on Instagram,
right?
But there's a point that you can start putting a swipe up feature in your story. It could be like 8,000 or 10,000 or something like that. But what I'll do now is I'll post a story with a quick 15-second teaser for the video,
right?
And then I'll put a link to the YouTube video that they can swipe up and go to. So you can do the same thing with affiliate marketing on Instagram. So if you have a tool that you really like, you can do like a little 15-minute clip, and then you can swipe up to the affiliate Amazon link, and you can try to monetize it like that. So I think there are some options on the Instagram. It's just a little harder.
Yeah, yeah. I've been seeing the swipe up, and I was like, how do you do that? So like you said, it might be once you get to a certain amount, then they enable that feature. And yeah, that's, Devin and I were just talking yesterday. We were working on a new video in the shop, and he's like, maybe we need a business manager. We need somebody with like the mindset who can do all this work for us, so we can just focus on the like making and building and the crafting side of it. You know, it's like,
I got a question for you guys. Do y'all have a? I just started one. Do y'all have a Patreon?
We do. Yep.
Yeah, how's that work out for you guys? Because I'm new to it. I just started it.
For one, it's great. We actually, early on, we thought about it, and for the first year, I think we only put out 6 videos on YouTube, and we were like, well, we don't really have enough of a library that we want to ask people for money yet.
Right.
And then maybe it was the second year after we started putting out some things, putting a lot of time and work into it, a friend of mine said to me, like, look, there are some people out there, you've got thousands of views, so let's say if you're making even hundreds of views, there's people out there who like you, and if they have the means or the desire to support you, you should make that available to them. So you're not begging for it, unless you are, but if you just bring it up and say, like we do, if you want to support us in another way, you can do Patreon, and we don't have a lot, but we have some steady people who, for whatever reason, want to pitch in because they feel like it's something they get value from, and then that has allowed us. Now we're going to buy. Speaking of Panasonic, I think we're going to buy the S5, the Lumix, the nice 4K camera with.
Nice.
Speaking of, yeah, like color grading, the 10-bit, and all that stuff, and that's all money from there. That's all from Patreon, and that's kind of what we set it up as is. Hey, if we let this sit and gain some money, even if it's a little bit, eventually we can have a good chunk of money to just reinvest into the channel.
Yeah.
You know, I felt weird starting it. I really did. And that's why I put it off for so long. Cause it's a very odd thing to start. Just like, hey, give me money. But I will say, I was talking with House Works, Brian, and I think I heard them talking about it. And it was kind of the same thing you said, you know, you got to give them an avenue if they want to support the channel. And I've had people ask, like, hey, do you have a Patreon account? And I'm like, well, no, because I felt weird making it. But I kind of like it, and I tried to the way I set it up is like I wanted to give them something a little extra if they get on the Patreon. So I'm putting all my templates on there because people ask for the knife templates pretty frequently. Yeah. I normally draw them in CAD anyway, so I'll just put a PDF on there, you know, so that the patrons can have download PDFs and knife templates.
Yeah, we had that same conversation when we were same thing. We kind of felt weird. We're like, I don't know, do we have enough? You know, do we have enough of a backlog? Do we have enough? Is it worth it to do something? And like I said, when Devin's buddy was like, you know, you gotta give them an avenue to give you something because if you don't have the avenue, they're gonna give it to someone else, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that makes sense. So when we started it, we didn't want it to be like, if you're a patron, because you get all this stuff on Patreon. You know, it was like, if you know, we want to be able to put stuff up, and we've done some giveaways for patrons on Patreon, but it was more like we took a decent amount of time writing the information for Patreon to be like, if, you know, we want to give you good quality videos on YouTube, and that's what we want to give you, and we'll give it to you for free, but if you want to come over and support us, and you know that you're just going to help us make better quality videos for YouTube. So it was we tried to make it pretty specific, and not, you know, it's not that we don't want to give them more stuff, but it was like we want to spend our time getting doing good quality videos on YouTube. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We don't have much choice there.
Right.
It takes as much time as we can give now to putting out 2 videos a month on YouTube. I mean, that's all the time we have.
Yeah.
Like, we're putting all our time into that. Unless we had someone else who would upload things and do a little, like, we did a little bonus blooper reel on there, but we told people, like, we don't do commercials yet. I actually want to talk to you about that, James, but, like, we don't have any commercial breaks in ours, and they're, like, it can be a 50-minute video.
Yep.
So that's what we're trying to give someone.
Y'all aren't Alex stealing video games, you know?
And you know, that's another thing. Like, we've had people reach out to us about sponsorships and stuff, and it's just not
at this point. No hate to Alex Steele, by the way. I'm just saying, I think it's kind of funny.
Right. Yeah. If some stupid video game said, we're gonna give you $10,000 to put on your video,
I'm in.
I would do it.
Absolutely. Just right. Kidding. Yeah.
Hey, you can be in a Barbie world too and control the Barbie Jeep all over the we'd do that in a second.
The price is right, yeah. But you know, but for what they're offering, it's not worth it to drop it in the middle and give them thousands and thousands of views for their product. For a small amount of money, you know, and it's I'm not trying to sound like we're greedy, but you know, we have a product that we like to put out the way it is.
It's distracting too.
Yeah, and if we're gonna put a distraction in, then it's got to be worth it, you know.
Right. If we're gonna put a point in our video where you're gonna skip over it and have to like jump up and start to skip, that has to be worth it for us because almost everybody skips that stuff. So.
Oh yeah, and you know, the same argument can be made with the internal. YouTube ads, you know, it took me a while to feel comfortable to even put those on there because it was, it could be distracting, but
I wanted to ask you. I mean, you don't have to go too in depth, but I've seen your videos. They have a limited amount, I think, some of them. Do you probably not put as many as they suggest? Do you pick a few spots?
Oh yeah, definitely. So the way I have it set up is, I would rather my video make less money on ads and be a popular video. Mm-hmm. So what I try to do is I only use the skippable ads. I currently don't use any of the non-skippable ads, which I don't know if I'll change that in the future, but I'll go in there and I will adjust the ad breaks, and I'll put it in the very middle of the video, and I'll pick a spot. I'll pick a spot that makes sense.
Right.
And I'll put it right in the middle most of the time in the video. So if you're going to get hit with an ad, it's going to be once, hopefully. At the beginning or in the middle of that video. So.
Yeah, that's kind of what we've been talking about, that trying to decide if we want to do that, and maybe we'll do it on a few videos because right now we don't have any. I think we have one in the beginning and one at the end, but we think it all depends if it's worth it to us.
If you're going to do it, you got to do it. I feel like you got to do it quote unquote right. You know, you got to find a spot in the video where
because
your audience is invested.
Yeah, the YouTube breaks are insane. It's like every 5 minutes. Yeah. Like I've by accident left them in a few, right? Because now they do that automatic thing where they just pop it on your video.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hear someone complain. I'm like, why are they getting? I'm like, oh no. And then I look at it and it's a video with like 15 breaks. I'm like, oh my. Yeah, we hate that too. Sorry. Let me jump on that and change that. Yeah. So we might do a few and put one somewhere in the middle, because hopefully if they've watched 20 minutes of our video and there's one skippable ad, they'll stay with us.
Yeah, I think they will. And most of the time they do, you know, especially you know, if they're going to leave your video at that point, they probably weren't really paying attention that much anyway.
Right. Yeah.
You know, most of the time I would make sure to put it in there at a point where it's like, if you've been watching this, you want to know what happens.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you wait 3 seconds know, before you can see the end, just so I can make more of these videos, you know?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't use the word bad. I don't feel bad for it because, I mean, it's really what allows these little channels to kind of stay alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, and cover their expenses, so to speak. So.
Right. Yeah. That give or take whatever you're making, even if it's a couple $100 here and there, that really helps all of us continue on, because always Dustin and I, we talk about it all the time, we've gotten to a point, we're not making a lot of money, but we are making enough money to where if we want to buy gear and things for the channel, it doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It can be like, hey, we got to spend $200. It's not like, ooh, I don't know, it's the art of craftsmanship money, it's fine. And that's actually it's a good spot to be at. I mean, obviously we'd like to make a big handful of cash and not have to do anything else and just make YouTube videos, but to get to a point where we can feel comfortable spending more money on the channel, that's a nice spot.
Yeah, itself, it's nice when it, you know, gets to a point where it's self-sustaining, I guess.
Yeah. Would be
the
word. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think I've had, you know, with a few other people I've talked to, when you get to that point where you start feeling comfortable, like, okay, now I can use this money it doesn't have to just go into rent or into mortgage or whatever else, you know, school loans, but it can actually be used for a little bit of things here and there. I think it took, like you said, it took a decent amount of time for us to get to that point. But
oh yeah, and normally increases the quality of the content too. You know, if people are listening to this and they're like, you know, these guys are talking about just monetizing their craft. I mean, you know, what it does is it allows the maker to not only buy the materials and equipment needed, but also feel comfortable investing the time to go into the details
and not
on some of these things.
Right, you know? And not just the maker, the whole maker's family and the maker's wife and and the time that you leave the baby to go shoot at Dustin's house.
Right.
She knows that it's an investment. James, you're in Texas, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. So I wanted to ask a Texan, how do you feel about people kind of, it seems like a lot of big names are flooding to Texas from California and other places right now. How do you feel like Joe Rogan and Elon Musk and all these huge names who are bringing in big bucks? They're kind of fed up with certain things, so they're coming to Texas. What do you feel about that?
You know, I like that they recognize you know, the good qualities of the Texas economy. You know, it's great. It's great for the state to have a bunch of influential people who bring in a bunch of resources with them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a website, actually. I don't know if it's still up, but it was called HowMoneyWalks.com, I think. And what it showed is how resources have moved in between states over the last decade or so, based off the census data. And Texas is always green on that chart. People are in, I guess, California, New York are normally red. People moving out of those states into Texas. And I think to wrap it up, I would say that the reason they're doing it is just because of the amount of liberty, I guess, that Texas has compared to some places in the rest of the country. Freedom and liberty are kind of the cornerstones of the state. So if you're going to come here, you'll get more liberty and you'll get more freedom. Just make sure that you don't vote to get rid of that.
Don't come in and vote against us.
Don't make us like whatever state you're leaving.
Right. The big fear is that you know, I don't think it's a fear. You know, it could be an ideal scenario if they come and make Texas into the states that they're leaving. maybe in 50 years or now or so, you know, California will be like Texas, and we can all move there to nicer weather.
Yeah. You're like, all right, it's perfect. It's yeah. perfect. Could,
it's actually a master on. Plan. You know?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, leaving money in people's pockets. And I heard some people like, yeah, these people are just leaving because, or Joe Rogan's, he's getting big money deals, so he's just leaving to keep his money. Like, yeah, that's the point. He wants to keep his money. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the end of the argument.
Yeah, no state income tax here, so.
Right, he wants to keep his own money. That's all right.
Yeah, right. You can't fault him for that, yeah.
And once you move your business to Texas, I was thinking of it, what a great resource to be able to stamp your product made in Texas. Because, I mean, as a Texan, you know, or maybe you don't, that if something says from Texas, it's like it's a good thing for sure, like a badge of honor. You feel like it's tough. You feel like there's this nice, I mean, they could have their, whatever they're making in some mall.
There's pride.
Mall
there's
next pride. To a McDonald's. But what we think of like this cool, like tumbleweed out down in Texas. Like, right. And there's a pride in it. And you kind of know that it will be built tough, or you at least hope it will.
Yeah, there's definitely pride in the state, and there's good reason for it. I mean, I didn't grow up in Texas, but I definitely wish I did in some points, and it's definitely a great state to live in. So.
Where'd you grow up?
Grew up in Louisiana.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Louisiana. So, yeah, I would for anyone thinking about moving to Texas, I would recommend it highly.
Nice.
It's a great state.
So I want to ask you about one more thing before we kind of start to wrap it up, and that's actually your respirator.
That's funny you bring that up. I think that is the product that I have been asked the most about.
Yes.
On every video I post. Hey man, can I get the link to that respirator?
That's
good. I mean, I've started putting it in the description.
Beards are in, man. Everyone's growing beards. I've had a beard since literally I was in like middle school. So, but yeah, using regular respirators with a beard, I would say if professional and I'm doing something every day, you know, I would look into a better respirator. But I have just the 3M like flip down respirator with a particle. Particle filters on it, but I love that respirator. And it's funny, my buddy Sean was like, yeah, he's got the respirator for you because he's got the beard. And I was like, well, what about his nose? Like, there's nothing, because I didn't see the nose clip, but then I noticed that too. So.
It does come with a nose clip.
Yeah.
I will admit that I'm not perfect and I do not always wear it. I focus on breathing through my mouth in those scenarios. Right. It's not so, but most of the time, if I'm doing a heavy workload type, hogging away handle material, I'll definitely put the nose clip on. Takes a while to get used to. It's not a perfect system. It takes a while to get used to like breathing through your mouth like that. But I will say it's way more comfortable than the face covering version, especially for those of us who are bearded.
Right.
It's kind of an obscure product. I don't think they make a lot of them. It's called a Respo-Rator. The way it's spelled, like with a big O in the middle. They do have proprietary filters, unfortunately. Right. But there are some guys on Thingiverse, so you can get a 3D printed adapter for 3M filters.
Nice.
I like it, man. It's really hard to find them right now after COVID hit. I guess people bought them up in a weird way for COVID. I put a link to it on all my videos because I'm like, look, it's on Amazon. You just got to wait till it's in stock.
Right.
It's a useful item. I like it. I do like it, but it is different. It takes some getting used to.
Was it your in-laws that got it for you?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I think so. I'm having a hard time remembering, but I asked for it. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. I was going to say, because like, if that showed up in my, like, on my gift for a present, I'd be like, I guess, thanks. Like, it's not something you, I would say it's the fact that you asked for it, that made sense, right? You, like, you saw it, you did your research, and then you wanted this thing. It's like, oh, yeah. If someone, you know, when I'm so used to wearing a certain respirator, if someone tried to get me something different, I'd be like, okay, I guess I'll try it out.
Yeah, but, it seems great. Like a late night infomercial buy.
It's definitely some scuba influence, you know. I'll tell you what, man, it works great. I mean, it looks stupid, but it works really good.
It's kind of genius, though. You put that in your videos, people are like, wait, what is going on?
Dude, I didn't mean for it, but gosh, dude, I mean, like, every damn video, people ask about that respirator specifically.
Dustin, we got to get you like a... You gotta get one, man. Maybe like a tuba with a filter in it. And just...
Get something to get more people asking about stuff. We joked before about actually making mistakes on purpose in videos just to have, to have more comments. People like,
more interaction.
Yeah, right.
YouTube interaction.
Dude,
I would love backwards. To do that. That'd be actually really fun. That'd be a good April Fool's video idea. I'm just gonna make a knife and make all the wrong choices.
Yeah, we 100% thought about that. Let's do a complete like wrong episode and see what happens.
That's a good idea. And then, you know, just have like crooked, warped knife, gluing on handle scales that haven't been flattened. You know, you heat treated it and then ground it so that it turned blue while you're
on the edge while you're grinding.
Oh, that'd be great. That would make me so happy.
Just sand it off so you can't see it.
Just the comment section would be lit.
It would blow
as the
up.
Young kids are saying.
You probably have 100,000 views overnight.
Oh my god.
That'd be the same. We could on that same channel. We could do the. We thought of doing unfinished products or projects. Right. So like we do half of it normal. Like, hey, we're going to do this, and we explain it, and then 10 minutes in, Dustin just walks away, and then 30 minutes is in the background, and then it just ends.
You're like, well, okay.
That's another unfinished project.
Brought to you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, people would probably eat that up. And the cool thing is that, you know, I feel like a new channel couldn't get away with that, but a channel that's been a slightly established could do it, and then your subscribers and followers and supporters would be like the anti-troll team in the comment section. You know, it'd be really fun to watch because, you know, they'd be like, one guy would be like, this guy's an idiot, and he's like, no, he's not. He knows what he's doing. And that'd be awesome.
You're an idiot because you don't get
you
it.
Get
you know?
It's a joke.
Yeah, I may selfishly steal y'all's idea.
Fool's knife. Hey, man, it's open there. It's out there for the world now.
Yeah.
We can all do April Fool videos.
Yeah, we should coordinate April Fool's videos.
We should
coordinate an April Fool's knife building video submittal.
That's a
all in the same day with like Simple Little Life, Outdoors 55, and House Works, and like everyone makes a video of just making a really crappy knife.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome.
And then you send it to us for Dustin to finish, and he just sits it down, and it's 30 minutes of a box just sitting there, and then it ends.
And then you can like fake performance test and be like, this is the best knife I've ever made.
I'll like cut pieces of grass and stuff. It's awesome.
It's so sharp. Cut my whole lawn with this knife.
Cut a piece of styrofoam. And we'll all be wearing the Respo Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's like in the movies when they heat up the knife to cauterize the wound and then you're like, well, that knife's ruined.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Yeah. I always love the memes. It's like, as a knife maker, I'm thinking this. Like,
yeah, no kidding.
Well, too bad for that.
Yeah. Rambo not just ruined his temper.
Yeah, right. He's definitely not going to be able to stab anybody with that knife now.
Yeah.
Can't.
You'll live,
any,
but
paper.
Your knife is... Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I like that. It's a good idea.
Yeah. All right, well, so we like to ask our guests about their disaster stories, and I let you know this so you could kind of be prepared. But do you have a disaster story for us, James, something where you may have started something or created something or made something that just failed on you and you had to start over and it is what it is? And I like the idea that we all have these
No,
things,
I just
so.
I don't make any mistakes.
No, of course not.
And that's it. Thanks for listening.
The more you know. No, yeah, I make plenty of mistakes. I make a lot of mistakes. And I try to actually show most of them in the videos that I produce. Because they're numerous, and I try not to edit them out.
Yeah, we do the same thing. It's great. People love
it. Yeah, so mistakes are part of the learning process. Mm-hmm. And I think people who are starting a craft, knife making, they are afraid to make their first or second knife because they want to do it perfect. And it's like, man, you just got to make a couple. But you know, when it comes to my biggest recent failures, I would say it's probably the there's a video I made recently on making a or restoring a 1937 Atlas lathe.
Yeah.
And it's a really old piece of equipment, really cool piece of equipment. And it's kind of an obscure mistake, so I'll try to explain it so it makes sense. There's components on the machine that are made out of a material called ZAMAC, which I didn't know what it was. It's actually an acronym. Mm-hmm. It stands for zinc, magnesium, aluminum, and kupfer, which is the German word for copper. What they did is they mixed all these things together and they'd pour them into castings for components. And the Atlas lathes that were made in like the 30s, 40s by Craftsman Atlas, they were sold by Sears and Roebuck. Okay. They would make a lot of the gears and a lot of the cages and components out of ZAMAC. So when I was taking apart this lathe, there is a cage that holds the gears that allow you to slide, the cross slide to the right and to the left on the lead screw.
Yep.
And this cage was made out of ZAMAC and it was broke. So the first thing I did, mistake number one, is I tried to braze it with aluminum brazing rod. And I didn't realize, I mean, like an idiot, I probably should have looked it up. I didn't realize that the melting point of ZAMAC is way less than 700 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, no shit.
So I just melted this thing. So so that was mistake number one. And I have it in the video. It's kind of like an oh crap moment. So now I got this melted piece. So I try my best. I get all the measurements off of it. I draw it up in CAD. And I'm going to make it out of aluminum. Billet aluminum, which would, you know, I could buy another piece, by the way. They make these for like $120. I mean, it's pretty expensive. They make this piece for $120, cast it out of billet. I mean, a machine out of billet.
Right.
So anyway, I start machining this thing and I lay my template down onto it that I printed out and I get it all machined. I must be like 5 hours into this piece.
Oh, jeez.
And then I realize that it's the template, I glued it on upside down.
Oh, no.
I should have glued it on with the ink of the template. Should have glued it the other way.
Oh, geez.
And this is the only like 4-inch piece of aluminum that I have. So that was a disaster. So what I ended up doing is, and that's kind of learning here, is most disasters in the shop, you can think of a creative way to fix your problem.
Right.
You know, most of them. Like, for instance, if you're grinding on a knife post heat treat, and you get it too hot, and you change some coloring, you know, and you ruin your temper, you could always reheat treat that knife.
Yep.
You know, most of the time. You know, so there are things that you can do to recover. So in this case, I was able to recover. I ended up cutting it in half, bringing the pieces. I ended up using some knife making techniques, which were I was learning from Kyle Royer at the time, watching his videos. He put together a lot of his takedown knives with hardened dowel pins.
Oh, right.
So he'll drill holes between pieces of his handle and he'll actually have a hardened dowel pin. So I ended up cutting this piece in half and putting it back together in an orientation that it would actually work in a machine. And to reattach the two pieces of aluminum to each other, I used hardened dowel pins, locator pins, along with JB Weld to get it to work. So it's on the lathe right now and it's working. And it's perfectly fine. But there, you know, it was a little bit of a journey, and you know, I actually thought, funny little side note, I thought that video was going to be slightly more successful than it was because it was such a long process, but it's probably because I talked the whole time. I shouldn't have talked the whole time. But, long story short, like that part is all in that video, and it's kind of funny. If you know the backstory, I guess.
Oh, man. That's awesome. So everybody go out and check out that video.
It's just painful. Lathe.
Yeah.
You don't have to watch the whole damn thing. It's 30 minutes long. Just go skip to that part.
Well, I'll only watch like 17 minutes, and then when there's that commercial break, I'm not going to watch the rest, just so you know.
There you go. Speaking of trolls on YouTube, I tell you what, the machinists out there are brutal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
dude. Man. The old crotchety machinist cracked me up. They're like, "Oh, you're using that Chinese piece of crap lathe, and no wonder why your tolerances are off." And it's like, dude, I mean, I don't have like a $4,000, piece of equipment here to use,
and I don't have 10 feet of wall space to put a big lathe in here. You know, that's something that would.
The guy's got like a 2-ton bridge port in his garage, and he's like, you know, this is how I do my milling operations.
Right? Yeah.
This guy's cracked me up.
Yeah, I just gotta love the trolls, man. They get me. It's like I try not to be drawn in, but can't help it sometimes.
I like it. So what I don't argue with them. That's the key. I normally thank them. That is the best thing. So they'll come at you for some random thing. They'll normally come after you. The last one was like, hey, your knife. It's like a how-to 101 video on how to make a knife. And the guy's like, I just want to point out that this is not a forged product. Like, well, no shit, dude.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Now I'm enlightened.
Yeah, this is a stock removal knife for like your first knife, all right? But no, you answer those guys with like, oh, thanks for pointing that out. I didn't say that in the video. I'll try to do better next time.
Yeah, right.
And then almost every single troll will be like, wow, this guy actually responded to my comment. And then they apologize.
Yeah.
Most of the time they apologize.
Yeah.
And like, I wasn't trying to be critical, man. I just wanted to point it out for other people. I'm like, thanks, dude. And it's like you hug it out afterwards.
I had a guy recently who was like, talking about my draw knife wasn't sharp enough and, any hickory wouldn't cut, wouldn't have to struggle with hickory. I was like, oh man, then he hit us. He hit like a spot that really bothered me. I was like, man, F you, dude. Like, my draw knives are sharp as shit. Like, don't play with me. Don't tell me that I'm not using a sharp tool and I don't know how to do it. Unless you're here in my shop using my tool and my piece of wood, then you can criticize me. I was like, otherwise, I really wanted to say, like, what is keeping.
Dude, the person
shut.
Who gets the worst trolls, I think, is Alex Outdoors 55.
Yeah.
I mean, and he'll post it, but dude, he gets some like comments that are like off the wall bad.
So funny, man. That
I think it's
that
because guy. He does so many sharpening videos, and there are a bunch of internet warriors who think they know how to sharpen that. Perfect.
Alex, if you're listening, we got that build together. I don't know if you saw our video. We made the pirate cutlass. That was a collaboration with Alex. We gave him a machete to do a build along. It's been funny. We've had a fun relationship over the years. He's kind of comment back and forth on videos, but. Yeah, it's good stuff, man. It's a good community, man. I really appreciate you coming and joining us today and chatting. This has been so much fun. Yeah,
for sure, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Quick recommendations.
Yeah. So I have a recommendation, and this is somebody that I think, I don't know if everybody knows, but I know and I've known for a while. Chris Cash, who's from Mount Phillip Metalworks. He's a blacksmith here in Maryland, out in Frederick, and he's teamed up with. The guys from now they have a YouTube channel called That Works, Matt Stagmer and Ilya, which used to be on the they used to have a YouTube channel, but they have some really awesome videos on YouTube, and then Chris is just a really cool maker. He's been making these really awesome dragon tail bottle openers. So blacksmith, metalsmith, they do all sorts of knives and swords and really cool content. And the other thing that Chris does, which I really like, is that he's like a buyer and seller of old tools. So he gets old blacksmithing tools, power hammers and things, and restores them to a point and then resells them. So check out Mount Phillip Metalworks on Instagram, and I'll put a link in the show notes below.
Nice. I'll go next. Speaking of state pride, we just had Maryland native Travis Pastrana do a Gymkhana racing trick video. If people listening haven't heard of him, Gymkhana's like, it used to be Ken Block, and he'd do these amazing runs through cities and doing tricks and jumps and drifts and these rally amazing cars. Rally cars. So Travis Pastrana has kind of taken over, and he did it in Annapolis, which is Maryland's capital and his like home area. But he's got this Subaru STI. It's like 862 horsepower.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Super beast. And he jumps over canals, and then he goes all around Annapolis, and then he goes out to Southern Maryland, and he hits like, I forget, I don't know what his speed was, but at the end of that video, when he jumps and hits that ramp back on these country roads, I don't know how far he went, but it felt like he went like 50 yards. and jumped like a whole hill. He must have been going like 140 miles per hour.
Yeah, I think it was more than that. I think he was up in like 160, 170 something, because they had that shot of his speedometer as it goes up, and you see his face like, ugh!
Yeah, and his faces are so good the whole time. He Ken Block's, his old videos, he was like super, like the whole time, stern, like he kept it cool. Travis, every time he hits something, he's like, oh, shit, oh, here we go. But just the coolest, like if you have any interest in any type of car stuff, man, watch him do these amazing drifting trick video. I mean, it's, they don't need our recommendation. It's got like 20 million views or something, but man, it's an amazing video. And if you're listening at home for the Makery drinking, that's another YouTube recommendation, and I think we've had about 100 during this episode, so
hope you're, guys,
hope you're still there.
We're referring, Craig Lockwood from Knife Talk Podcast put out a Instagram post for all the kind of a drinking game for the Makery Network podcast. It was like, if the Art of Craftsmanship guys talk about a YouTube channel, drink. If the if Simple Little Life talks about snow, you drink.
There you go. That's perfect.
So we're just helping to get everybody enjoying themselves.
My recommendations.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Respo Raider. No,
okay. Yeah, nice. Affiliate link.
I would say I have a book recommendation.
Right on.
Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. If you have not read that, it is life changing for some and affirming for others. It's a really good book. I would say, as far as other makers go, I've been just kind of watching a ton of Kyle Royer stuff lately.
Yeah.
That guy is freaking legend.
Yeah, he's been doing some cool sword builds and stuff recently.
Man, it's just a whole nother level. So I've been trying to up my takedown hidden tang game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been trying to learn off of his stuff pretty hardcore. So I would definitely, if you don't, if you make knives and don't follow him, I don't know what you're doing. But if you don't, go follow Kyle Royer.
It's like Nick Wheeler, who? Sure.
Yeah, no kidding, right? If Nick Wheeler did not teach you how to hand sand, then you're doing something wrong. Kyle Royer and the Extreme Ownership. I would definitely read the book, listen to the podcast. And that guy, he's on point.
Right on. Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, man. This has been awesome. It's been fun to chat and laugh and drink a little bit and hang out. And hopefully we help some other folks following along with the Makery Network drinking game to enjoy their evening or day or whenever it is as well. I wanted to just make a real quick announcement. We actually, during the podcast, went over 99,000 subscribers. 99,000 subscribers.
We should celebrate that instead of 100,000. Yeah. Can we have a 99,000? Can we have a 99 party?
Yeah, so we have 99,022 subscribers. So
congratulations.
We're getting and when we do hit 100,000, if you guys are listening, please join us. We are going to do a live stream. We're going to do a bunch of giveaways. We've got some axes. We got some, we're going to do some merch.
We're gonna try to get some merch. If we don't have it in person at the time, we're definitely gonna order a bunch and send it out to whoever. We just want to have a big party. I think we'll have a bonfire or something. It depends, but we want everyone to come along, hang out. We'll give a bunch of stuff away, have a good time.
Dustin's gonna shave his beard. not quite
Red, my beard is not nearly as red as yours, but definitely a nice. I got a dark.
Think
red
of
beard.
All of the strength you would lose instantly.
Yeah, it just
it's not worth it.
Yeah,
wife wouldn't like it either. And why am I growing a beard if my wife doesn't like it?
For sure,
we'll trim it on camera, make it nice. Right. But James, one last time, what are your Insta and your YouTube?
Oh, it's Red Beard Ops on YouTube and Instagram. So if you want to find me, that's the place.
Easy peasy.
Right on. Awesome. Well, everybody, thanks so much for listening. This has been awesome. We really appreciate you for joining us, James. And if you guys want to listen to some awesome podcasts, definitely please go check out all the other podcasts and makers that are on the Makery Network. You guys can all find us on YouTube, The Art of Craftsmanship. You can find us on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship, and you can support us on Patreon and go over and support James on Patreon. And yeah, you know, if you feel like you got something out of it, then that's what that's for. If you want to support somebody, we're willing to take that support and put it right back into the content we're creating for you guys. So thanks everybody for listening. James, thanks for hanging out with us. Devin, it's always a pleasure.
Hey.
And
yeah, thank you guys.
And we'll talk to everybody next time.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.